The hate crimes debate renewed. Advocates thank Joe Donnelly in an ad. That plus Trump's tax cut for the wealthy and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending August 3rd, 2018.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, Governor Eric Holcomb announced he'll support hate crimes legislation in the 2019 session after vandals defaced a Carmel synagogue with anti-Semitic graffiti.
Legislation to increase penalties for crimes committed because of a victim's characteristics, such as race, religion, and gender identity, failed for years. But now, Governor Eric Holcomb says he'll work to find consensus on the issue ahead of the 2019 session. Longtime supporters of the effort say Holcomb's backing will be a big boost, but note those on the other side are entrenched. Republican religious conservative opposition helped defeat the legislation in recent years, and they say Holcomb's support for such a bill won't matter. Indiana is one of five states without a hate crimes law.
Is Holcomb's support a turning point in the hate crimes debate? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwanes, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette Statehouse reporter Nikki Kelly. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting Statehouse reporter Brandon Smith. Ann Delaney, is this what this bill needs to get over the hump?
Well, I hope so. I mean, obviously didn't see Governor Holcomb help it get over the hump last session of the legislature or any number of years before that. The Republicans have blocked it. So it would be nice, with supermajorities and the governor's support, if we finally got into the mainstream in the country with this and weren't one of five holdout states that say that it's okay to hate and to be a racist or a bigot on the basis of religion or race or gender or sexual orientation. So I hope it does. I hope it does. I hope he's serious about working the halls, because the problem is in his party.
This bill has taken a step back in each of the last few sessions. It got out of the Senate three sessions ago, got out of committee two sessions ago, and the last session couldn't even get out of committee. And even advocates say the other side is entrenched here, just as I suppose advocates are on what the bill should and should not be. So how is Eric Holcomb going to make the difference?
There's a debate about how to do this. So the 45 states number, and that we're five states left out of this, is a little bit misleading in the sense that 45 states do protect race and religion, but they don't. But the long list that was in the Senate bill as it was first considered in the committee, states are all over the board on what they actually cover beyond race and religion. The sticking point for the proponents of hate crime legislation here want it to include sexual orientation and transgender protections. They don't want to leave those out because they don't think, and they're right, you won't get a stand up and down vote on just that piece that'll
sure.
put it in later. So
right.
if you pass what most people can pass, or what the majority can pass, you won't be able to add it in, right? It's just politically too difficult to do that. So I understand why the staunchest advocates want this comprehensive hate crimes legislation. There was a compromise bill last session that the proponents pulled out of for that reason. It's going to come down to, and personally, I think on the transgender piece, that's the toughest piece I think for legislators. But personally, in my opinion, and I've said this before, if someone who is transgender is attacked by a person who perceives that being transgendered is either not a thing, right, or it's not a real thing, or it's something that they hate and oppose, it doesn't really matter if you believe that transgendered is a choice or not. Because that person has been assaulted for that reason. So that should be included. I believe it should be included in the hate crimes legislation. Ultimately, it's going to come down to, should we do a laundry list, or should we do an enhancement that gives flexibility when these crimes are prosecuted?
You know, I mentioned that this issue's taken a step backwards. It's never really come up in the House before. It didn't get a hearing. It didn't get a vote in the committee 2 years ago when it did pass out of the Senate. Even if Holcomb's support does get it back out of the Senate, the House at this point is kind of a big unknown, isn't it?
Well, yes, it is an unknown on any number of issues. We could stipulate that. And if memory serves, I may be wrong on this, but hasn't Republican leadership in the House in the past.
Speaker last session.
Speaker in other sessions yeah. called for this to be a priority and
part
of the
formal agenda. I don't know why we're studying it. It's just past, I think.
You know, it's far last session. And it's probably an oversimplification. Ann says the message from opponents is it's okay to hate. And I think, in fairness, we should point out that I don't think that that is the clarion call that they're offering. They're suggesting that it's a matter of punishing action and crime, not thought and not motivation. In the example, for instance, and I'm not arguing one way or the other, but in the example of the transgender individual who is perhaps assaulted or beaten because of his or her lifestyle choices, there would still be the assault charges, which theoretically could be prosecuted with enhancements
well,
that are under the current
law.
You
can argue that both ways, John.
I'm simply
okay,
saying
but
it's not that there's a celebration of hate necessarily as
right.
much as there is a defense of concern about the police of thought. I mean, a lot of this comes down to, and I've heard the opponents articulate this, they say, what if preachers in the pulpit are talking about the quote-unquote sin of homosexuality and they're, you know, carted off to jail? Well, first of all, that's,
it isn't about speech.
I know. Well, that's not.
Well,
you're
yeah,
right. You have to have
crime.
Another
you
crime.
Have a crime.
And, but that's lost on apparently some people who think that this
no,
is.
That's the argument some people
I'm
use
merely pointing. That's what we're about here.
Okay.
Let me ask this. A couple months ago, we talked on this show that there was an intra-party fight in the Republican Party over the marriage plank. And let's call it more progressive language that what I like to dub the Holcomb wing of the party wanted. And those on the other side in the party said absolutely not, and they mostly won pretty resoundingly. And that's pretty much the same fight, or the two sides that are in this fight over the hate crimes bill. So why do we think Eric Holcomb will have success now when he didn't have success then?
Well, I mean, you do have to remember that there are Democrats who get to vote on that bill, too. So maybe if he can, you know, shore off half the Republicans plus the Democrat support, you'd still have a majority to get the bill passed. So that's a little different than the fight, you know, within an intra-party fight on the plank of marriage. Now, one thing we do have to talk about is what kind of bill we're talking. Like, are we talking about a true hate crimes bill where there's a separate offense if it's motivated by hate, or are we talking about just an aggravator, which we already have in state law, which can already be used in state law? We already use the age of someone as an aggravator in crime. We already use if you're a police officer as an aggravator. So I don't know if just saying these other things count. I mean, I guess it would take us out of the only five who don't have it, but it's not a true hate crime.
Yeah, that's actually, I mean, Speaker Bosma even talked about that last session when he said he supported it. It's the bill that everybody kind of talks about, which is the Sue Glick bill that's been offered the last few years, would ultimately be largely symbolic, would it not?
I think symbols in this particular case are important. I mean, just as when we had the bill for recognizing gay marriage, these are important symbols. Is Indiana going to be seen as a progressive, tolerant state, or is it going to be seen as some place where it's okay to hate and it's okay to discriminate? And I think it isn't simply a statement. It is a recognition of what this state stands for. And I think that's why it's
you know, and the best strategy here for proponents, supporters of this, would be to frame it in economic terms, as we've seen on other issues. That this isn't about do you support alternative lifestyles? Dare you, you know, adherent to the Bible? Or not. This is about do we want to be seen as a backwater state that's not welcoming to progressive companies and their employees and their contribution?
Well,
of course,
maybe it's just the moral thing
right,
to do.
Well, that too, but I mean, for those who might be on the
why
fence, framing it as an economic issue might be.
All right, well, time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, will Governor Holcomb's support for a hate crimes bill be the push it needs to finally pass? A yes, B, no, or C, it is a little too soon to tell. Last week's question, should the public know who donates to Curtis Hill's Legal Defense Fund? 82% say yes, 18% say no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, the group Feeding Indiana's Hungry this week launched an ad campaign to thank Democratic Senator Joe Donnelly for his work on the Farm Bill.
The ads focus on Donnelly's work to fund the Emergency Food Assistance Program, which provides emergency assistance to low-income Hoosiers via providers like food banks. The campaign includes digital and print ads, as well as outdoor advertising in the donut counties around Indianapolis. Donnelly, who's in the middle of a tough re-election fight, serves on the Senate's Agriculture Committee.
Mike O'Brien, we talked a little bit about this last week, too, with the Trump payments to farmers to cover the tariffs loss. Can Joe Donnelly win the votes of a large group of farmers in this state?
I think he has before. I think he will again. And I think during his time, one, I mean, he's a U.S. Senator from Indiana, and he gets that. He's on the Ag Committee. He's participated in these issues. He's listened to farmers. I mean, you can't be from Indiana from either party or any office and not be responsive to the needs of the agricultural community. I think he's done that. At the end of the question at the end of the day is it going to matter? Donald Trump's still popular here. It depends how he votes on what matters more is he going to keep saying he was deciding votes to not repeal the Affordable Care Act? Is he going to support Donald Trump's Supreme Court nominee? There's things that voters outside of just the agricultural community are going to consider, and it's not going to be these same issues. So I don't think this is going to rank in the top for the undecided voters and turn the election.
Well, I think it's going to have a. I think definitely it's going to have an impact. That and the tariff war. I mean, you've got the Columbus area is the biggest import-export center per capita in the country, and here we have Donald Trump putting tariffs on that and on agriculture that are going to influence and affect negatively Indiana business. So Joe Donnelly is doing exactly what he should be doing, and that is representing Hoosiers, and that's why he didn't repeal the Affordable Care Act, because we now have 400,000 Hoosiers covered because of the Affordable Care Act for the first time. So he's doing exactly what he should do, whereas Mike Braun, it wants to be a rubber stamp for Donald Trump. Whatever Donald Trump wants, Mike Braun says, yes, 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 yes. It's supposed to be a checks and balances, and Kavanaugh is a bad choice for the Supreme Court, and I think Joe Donnelly is going to look at all those facts, including the fact that Kavanaugh doesn't think that a sitting president can even be deposed.
Well, that's an entirely separate issue, I think.
But I think
so. Let me ask that. Nikki, you and I talked about this earlier this week. Apart from the issue of Joe Donnelly and farmers, what do you make of Feeding Indiana's Hungry taking out billboards and newspaper ads to thank him for his support on the Farm Bill? What are they trying to accomplish here?
Well, I think they and lots of Donnelly supporters are trying to find a way to keep his name in the news and in a positive light, and this was one way to do that. The ad buy was only about $10,000, and I did double check. They're not using any of the state appropriation. They're using money from Feeding America.
So. Right. Let me ask this, though. So if you're Joe Donnelly, obviously you're trying to make, you know, trying to help out farmers. The placement of the billboards is not an accident. They put it in the donut counties around Indianapolis. And if you're Joe Donnelly, you are counting on winning Indianapolis, so where you really need to focus is places like the donut counties around Indianapolis. Mike kind of pointed this out. This matters to farmers, for sure. And it matters to low-income Hoosiers. Are the people in the donut counties going to care one way or the other about how Joe Donnelly voted on the farm bill?
Maybe more than you would think, not on the particulars of the issue, but again, it goes, it seems to me, to the broader issue of independence, of putting Indiana constituents first. And I think it's subtly, it does suggest that whatever the issue is, and wherever the White House may be, and wherever his own caucus, headed by New York Senator Chuck Schumer, may be, this is where his interests lie and where his focus is in Indiana. And to that extent, I think people who the closest they get to a farm is when they go to the zoo and, you know, pet the goat and then rush over and get the hand sanitizer going. I mean, they do understand at least that messaging, I think, is important.
Well, the New York Times this week reports that the Trump administration is mulling a unilateral $100 billion tax cut aimed at the rich.
The Times report says Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin discussed the idea during a G20 summit interview in Argentina. The proposal would change how capital gains are calculated to account for inflation, a policy that would result in billions in tax savings for the wealthy. And part of the Trump administration's consideration is whether such a change is possible without congressional authorization.
Nikki Kelly, is this what Republican candidates like Mike Braun need in the news right now?
Probably not his top choice. I mean, to be campaigning on a tax cut for the wealthy, especially when he's wealthy himself and trying to kind of not show that. And also, frankly, it seems a little swampy, you know, the whole trying to figure out a way to do it without congressional approval and give, what, $80 billion to the 1% earners. So I think he's probably hoping for some different topics.
Yeah, a lot of Republicans believe that the tax reform message is going to be a winning one for them this fall, and they've been preaching that since the bill was passed last December.
Referring to
the old tax reform, the original tax reform bill. How much does this really, like, eat into that message that they're trying to preach?
I think it could potentially, because I think Republicans in the administration, they were successful in framing, let's call it the original, as something that helped most every American, or certainly the middle class. Now, we can argue about whether that was true or not. Well, that's just
as Anne Delaney nods her head.
As you famously said a few moments ago, that's an entirely other topic. But you know, it does, I think, have the potential to erode the goodwill that was generated by the initial plan. It just seems to, whether it's swampy, whatever term you want to use, it just seems, you know, a little bit
underhanded.
Stop anyway. I mean, it's a. We'll
get to it.
Well, that's
stop
not the word I'm looking
finish
for.
Finish your thoughts.
Yeah.
Yes.
She doesn't get to talk twice.
I tell you,
Mike. Let me ask this: how much are Hoosier Republicans like Mike Braun, kind of shaking their head about this one?
Well, this is defined as a rich people's tax cut because it's a rich people's tax. I mean, it's not like your Hoosier family that's making $39,400 a year is sitting on their long-term capital gains because they don't want to get hit with a 15% tax rate, and they wish it would just eliminate the inflationary, you know, if they could just cancel out inflation, then they'd sell the company or whatever the capital gain is that they're sitting on. So it's the timing's a little, you know, we're 90 days out from an election. I'd rather not talk about rich people's taxes, and this is just a rich people's tax. It just is, and there are those. So when you say it's only going to benefit the rich, well, it's because it only applies to the rich, really. But I'd like to have the debate maybe in January.
Yeah. They'd like to do it under the table. It's like the emperor was not wearing clothes, okay? This is what this is. The first tax bill and this tax bill are designed to do exactly what Donald Trump wants to do, and that is cut taxes for the top 1% in this country and trickle down a little tiny bit to the middle class. They said the same trickle-down theory they've been arguing for the last 40 years, that wages were going to grow. Guess what? They're not. That the economy was going to grow so much that the deficit would shrink. Guess what? It's exploding. It is all a fabrication.
It is designed to do
exactly what they want it to do, which is that make the wealthy wealthier at the expense of the middle class and working class. And they're doing a great job of it. Anybody who thinks he's a populist is delusional.
To be fair, Mike, I'm not sure Republicans saying we're with the Clintons is going to help all that much.
Well,
but I'm just
this was back when Democrats actually were interested in cutting people's taxes or having tax
reform. We're also interested in cutting the deficit, which we would have done until George Bush came in to the office. It would have been gone by now.
It would have been gone by
2020 under that tax code until George Bush got in there.
So close. George W. Bush.
No.
Well,
yeah,
no,
George W.
Because it was Herbert Walker Bush
right.
That actually plugged the gap.
State Senator Andy Zay got into some hot water this week after an old social media discussion was unearthed in which Zay says racism isn't real.
Northeast Indiana Senator Andy Zay made the comments in a private discussion since made public from before he was a state lawmaker. In the conversation, first reported by the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette's Nikki Kelly, Zay says, quote, "the biggest minority class in America is the white male." In a discussion that also touched on tax abatements and the minimum wage, the Republican lawmaker also appears to call President Barack Obama a Muslim who hates America. Zay now says he should have been more careful with his words and that everyone should be treated equally regardless of race.
John Schwanis, Zay is up for re-election, although I was just saying this is the first time he's actually running because he was caucused in to replace Jim Banks. So he's running for re-election in a pretty solidly Republican district. Let's be frank. Will these comments hurt his chances or help them?
Are we being frank?
Yeah.
Probably won't keep him from winning this election for any number of reasons. There are some who are simply, you know, they just would go into spasms if they were trying to pull any lever other than the R lever. So there you have that group. Then you have others, probably a small percentage, who is celebrating this wave of political incorrectness that we've seen from the White House. I mean, look at the Republican gubernatorial candidate in Georgia right now. That's basically the whole platform is, I'm a redneck, you know.
Racist pig,
yeah. Well, I don't know if he says he's racist, but
he
suggests as
much.
He
probably didn't say he was a pig either.
But comes close. And so there seems to be a celebration at this time in our political history of, you know, just being out there and sort of being unencumbered by certain standards that we've sort of politically have lived under for the past generation or so. So I don't think it maybe cuts into a margin, but I don't think it's enough to sway the race.
The Indiana Black Caucus sent out a Black Legislative Caucus sent out a pretty sharply worded statement today, questioning what Andy Zay has to say here. But frankly, is Zay going to suffer any sort of consequences for this?
Probably not. I agree with maybe his margin might shift a little, but it's a pretty solid area. I know the Black Caucus was especially upset that, A, he didn't apologize. He said he chose his words badly, but he didn't apologize. And, B, they were very annoyed that he used Dr. Martin Luther King quotes to sort of, in his, quote, non-apology. So they want him to come to their districts and meet their constituents so that he can see that racism is indeed real here in Indiana.
You think that would be a good move for Andy Zay to do?
Well, I think it would be. It would also be a good move to have the Republicans in leadership condemn this, because it's not, as you say, not what he's saying is, I didn't expect to see it on the front page of the paper, but this is what I believe, which is, I think, really striking to the rest of us. And the idea that somebody like this would be in the Republican caucus and they just simply accept him says a lot about the Republican caucus, without saying anything about how we disagree with this and racism is real and we think he ought to reexamine his positions on these things. You know, it's time for a little leadership. It's time for somebody to stand up and say, this isn't acceptable dialogue. It isn't acceptable to think this, much less to articulate it.
I suppose if Zay had come out right away and apologized, that might be different. It would be, okay, it's done. That's in the rearview mirror. But he hasn't. He just said, oh, I guess I should have used different words. Should Republican leaders come out and say something about this?
One, I think Senator Zay's comments it was like a 16-page Facebook post. It was like ridiculously long. And it was not a great debate, right, on the issue of should we take
well, if
race
racism
and,
isn't real,
well,
comes
but
up,
that
it's
was,
probably
but
not
that
a
was,
great debate.
I mean, that was one line and like a lot of what the point was, I think, if you read this back and forth, was that we should not take race into consideration when we're making decisions about people, whether it's employment or housing or anything else, which I don't agree with. But that was, I think, the point. You know, this idea that I'm a white male, age 18 to 45, who was born in the United States, the idea that, like, I'm probably in the most advantageous position in the history of the universe is probably absurd, or is not absurd,
right?
So I think you got to be really, it's just another example, you got to be really careful when you're on social media ever, and two, if you want to go talk to your friend about race, the future of racism in America, or the state of racism in America, go have a debate, go engage people in the community, go do that, don't mouth off in these social media platforms when people can do this to you.
Well, legislative leaders declined this week to change information in a report which contains sexual misconduct allegations against Attorney General Curtis Hill.
Attorneys for Hill issued demands to legislative leaders last month that they publicly change inconsistencies in the report and turn over the names of those who wrote the memo and leaked it. First reported by the Indy Star, an attorney representing top lawmakers this week declined to do any such thing, citing an ongoing investigation into the allegations. The Indiana Inspector General is conducting that investigation with no timetable for its completion.
And Delaney, it's likely we won't get any big shift in this situation until the IG's report. So how big a distraction from here does this become?
How big a distraction? All he's trying to do is distract. I mean, he has multiple witnesses to his sexual harassment, and all he wants to do is blow smoke so that we don't focus on the allegations. You know, and when you try cases, you always say, if you have the facts, you pound the facts. You don't have the facts, you pound the law, or you pound the table. And that's what they're doing. They're pounding the table.
Does this threaten to overshadow, as a bunch of Republicans are running for office, does this threaten to overshadow some of the stuff they'd like to be talking about?
I don't know if it's going to be that. It's at the end of the day, it's about the Attorney General of Indiana in office that people really aren't that intense about, but I don't think there's going to be much more to say until the Inspector General comes out of any substance, really. Yeah.
Well, finally, the Indiana State Fair is underway at the fairgrounds in Indianapolis, and of course there are plenty of new food options for the adventurous Hoosier to try, including a deep-fried sugar cream pie. So, Mike O'Brien, will you be sampling this take on the Hoosier staple?
I weigh as much as I did in 1992, so I don't want to change that by shoving a bunch of sugar cream pie down.
Will you be trying the deep fried?
No, and I understand they're going to have an EMT team right by that vendor for the heart attacks.
I promised I would do this, so my confession is I really hate sugar cream pie. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week.
Get the hook.
Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/IWIR. Or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the new WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.